Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So in the Shankya non-dualistic dualism, non-theistic dualism, Sambandha, the concept of God. The earliest available text of Nirishvara Shankya, the Shankya Karika, does not discuss the existence of God at all. The absence of any reference to God led the proponents of this system to conclude that the early Shankya philosophers did not accept the existence of God. They argued that because the entire universe is a system of cause and effect, it could not be caused by God, because by definition God is eternal and immutable. That which is unchanging cannot be the active cause of anything. So the ultimate cause of the universe is eternal but ever-changing. That cause is Prakriti, the eternal and ever-changing unconscious material principle. Probably they catch is, okay, eternal and ever-changing is okay, but what about the unconscious part? You know? How is that going to work? Because at least in the Nyaya, they understand is that unconscious can't change itself. You have to be conscious to affect change. Otherwise, why would you bother? Right? If you're unconscious, what do you care? You know, it's like when you're unconscious, you know, you're not worried about, you know, changing curtains or cooking lunch or anything. You know, it's just you're. So it means even though they're very intelligent and trying to say, okay, God is eternally immutable. But the point is eternal and ever changing. Okay, but what about the unconscious part? So they're not quite. Yes.
Is it also that the misunderstanding is that knowledge is something that they control, that they're trying to grasp God logically?
Well, yeah, basically. I mean, you think that by your intelligence you can understand everything. This idea of actual that there's grace by which you can understand. You know, it's not that intelligence can't be used, that it's only by grace that through that intelligence you can understand it. You know, it's just like you don't know something about someone, but it's not by through your intelligence you can figure it out. But if they tell you, then you, but it's not that you can't use your intelligence and understand it, but still without their grace, that wouldn't have happened. You know, but in this case, it's even God, he is the intelligence, he gives the intelligence. So then, even what we're working with is not technically ours. You know what I'm saying? But it's just naturally, you know, comes along with it. We're conscious. Yeah.
Why they decided that it's unconscious?
Because that's there. It means it is unconscious. It's by observation you can tell. You know, also Shastras mention it that way. But their point is that when you get down into when it's discussing the modes of nature and how it's functioning, it's not necessarily at all points referring it back to God. Right? When you describe the creation, you start with the Lord, then how he expands, and then like this, and then you start the Mahat, and then, you know, everything. Then you get down into how the modes work and how that connects to this demigod and that demigod and all the different things. You don't necessarily at that point discuss its connection back to the Lord. So if you take just that part of the Veda, and that, then you're going to end up with you know, a discussion that doesn't include the Lord. But you know that Shastra does say the material nature is unconscious. You know what I'm saying? So you could do this, but it's just like, I only take part of the facts. You know, it's just like I say, I do not think that this is a really great idea. Right? Okay? You know, someone gives me, personally, I don't really think this is a very great book, right? They give you the book and you read it and you send back your comment, okay? So what am I going to see on the back of the book? You're going to say, see, you're going to see the quotation marks, a few dots, and really great book. You know, end of quote. Right? Isn't that what they're saying? So that's what they're doing. Is that all the information's there, but they're only interested in part of it, so they only take that part. You know, either by the modes of nature, they're unable to appreciate. Maya covers it. That's why they come up with this.
It bothers them then? It helps them in their enjoyment, unconscious and all that stuff?
It's how they can relate to trying to be happy in the world. You know what I'm saying? Because they're going to do it through intelligence. You know? Does that make sense? You know? Like that. Because this is also then the third one that's just intelligence. Only when you get to yoga then they include the mind, right? So that's where you get into the things about thoughts and feelings. Here it's just a matter of analyzation. Just they're more technical in analyzing what you see. Right? It means it's not that this contradicts Vaisheshika in the way of that everything's atoms. Like that, we accept that. You know, that's the term, the paramana. But the point is that how it's gotten from the atoms into the forms that you see. So how? What is the mechanics of that? What is the modes of nature working? How does that function? What's their effects? So that's what Shankya deals with, that the Nyaya and Vaisheshika don't. You know, so therefore it's more advanced than that level. You know, but this form happens to be, you know, atheistic, so then that's, or non-theistic, you could say. So it's not considered so much to be as much atheistic as non-theistic, because it's just, they don't talk about God, you know. The later ones, they may be atheistic, but it's not that the original authors were necessarily atheistic. Their presentation was just non-theistic. So it may be they were considering it automatically. You understood that part, and then you just got into the practicals of how you're going to apply it. Does that make sense? But the later authors then somehow or another, because it wasn't discussed, then they thought that therefore it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Somehow. Yes.
Also, it's interesting that this idea of God's grace doesn't come up at all before yoga. And only there it's only partial.
Yeah, it's only partial.
And then the Karma Master doesn't have it also. Only Vaishnava doesn't.
Well, that's the thing, is because the yoga system can be applied into Vaishnavism. Means you're meditating on the Lord because He's the Supreme, but once you come to that position, then in meditation you could surrender to the Lord. But it's not necessarily that one would. One could also not surrender. So it's you could say as a system it's also quite useful. Now, if Shankya, if you added on to it that the beginning of all this is God, that aspect of it, then it becomes very useful also. You know? So that's the all of them, if you connect the Lord to it, then they become useful. But if you don't, then less useful. Like that. Okay. In reply to this, one may argue that Prakriti is not intelligent and must therefore be controlled and directed by some intelligent principle in order to produce the universe. Right? That's what Nyaya and Vaisheshika are, that they presented before. Right? It means we'd also say that. But because there are many Purushas, they cannot guide and lead the infinite, all-pervading Prakriti. Right? So one must therefore conclude that there is a God. Right? But this is not possible, the proponents of non-theistic Shankya reply, because the act of controlling or guiding Prakriti means to do something or to be active. In addition, if God controls Prakriti, then what inspires God to make her create a world full of pain and misery? Right? He only sees that side. But what is their whole process for? To become happy. Mm-hmm. Everybody's trying to become happy. So the problem is, why does he make this place of misery? But the thing is you're trying to use it to enjoy yourself. You know, like that. So you can see is that they're only addressing certain elements. Like God can only be eternal and immutable. Mm-hmm. And so therefore they conclude that means he can't be involved. Mm-hmm. But why can't he be eternal and immutable and involved? But they've defined that way. So by the definition, it's wrong. Therefore, God doesn't exist. But that's your definition. Right? Because the other definitions, they keep going. He's eternal. He's immutable. He's all-pervading. He's all-powerful. You know, he's all-knowing. He's, you know, it goes on and on. But they only accept these ones that are just enough that you could say, okay, this is the definition of God, and everyone will say yes. But therefore, he can't do. Therefore, there can't be God.
Highly speculative.
Yeah. Yeah, speculative, but also just very narrow in its approach. So they therefore get their specific result that they want.
They have a specific health book they go to.
Just curious.
I mean, that Brahman is already hellish enough. It's nothing to do. I mean, in other words, it's like, let's say you're in, you know, you're bad, so they put you in prison. Right? But you have your cell, you come out, you move around, you go to lunch, you can go out and play in the yard, or you have some work that you do in there, right? You have something. Now what if you're bad there? Then where do they put you?
Isolation.
Yeah, in isolation. Yeah. So then that means you do not, that's Brahman.
Having to do so much work to get there.
And you have to work hard to get yourself there. You can't just, you know, you just can't just do what everybody else does. Yeah, you know, you have to really make some trouble. So that's Maya. See, we're taking it that we have to remember is the question is not why. Means you go to an insane asylum. Why is he hitting himself on the head? You know, and why is that guy over there? You know, watching television. Why is this? They're just all crazy. The question is, why are they here in the first place? The question is, why are the jivas here in the first place? Does that make sense? But since they're here, that they're all doing different crazy things, that we shouldn't be surprised. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, all the guys are, you know, driving motorcycles, but they all have different ones. Well, why does he have that one? Why is that one? Isn't that weird? But why didn't they all have the same, you know? The point is, why do they have motorcycles in the first place? That's the question. You know what I'm saying? So that's the element is that really, why are we here? So we're here to control and enjoy. So this is their method of how they see you could control and enjoy. Right? So basically, these six then cover everything that is non-Krishna conscious, but is still according to Veda. So you're going to have everybody, I mean, in following these six, whoever's following these six, are going to be not God conscious, or not at least Krishna conscious, or not, you know, devotionally conscious. But they're all going to be following the Veda culture. Right? So that means there's one culture is progressive, you could possibly adjust that. Right? Because like what we were seeing this morning, the discussion is that if you have that culture, if the culture you're following before you join, the culture after, that makes it easy. So all you've adjusted is your view. You've expanded the philosophy or added philosophy. You know, it didn't happen. You know, does that make sense? But the problem is you add philosophy because the living entity, being a person, he requires culture. That's where we run into the difficulties, is the cultural application. We don't accept at least the, you know, fundamentals of the culture that work, then it makes it very difficult. So here then the idea was is these sages, then they establish something that can be followed by these persons, but it's still within the culture. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have the thing, he still is you know, is not whatever, is attached to meat eating. Okay, so then therefore, then, okay, he can kill the goat and eat him. But how does that happen? You know, at midnight, at the cemetery, who's there? Right? Yeah. So therefore, it's not going to disturb anybody else. But if he has a, you know, a little shop in the market, it's a disturbance. You understand? So that shouldn't happen. But it follows these things. It restricts him. It makes him that. He has to think about how much work it is. Right? You know what I'm saying? And if he's intelligent, that means in there it's written in, but it's not made clear. But it's written there that after all that trouble, then he's going to kill this goat, right? But he's already mentioned to the goat that I'm killing you this lifetime, next life you'll kill me. But he's, you know, so blinded that he doesn't see that. You know? And eventually at some point, he notices that. And then he goes, okay, this is stupid. Right? Does that make sense? Is that it's so much easier to just go and buy some vegetables. Right? You just go to the market, broad daylight, everybody's there, pay your money, walk away, take them home, cook them. That's it. Right? But this other thing, it's a whole trip. Right? Thanks. Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that means we'll get into a little bit more the explanation of what you're asking. Why would people take this as a direction? That will get into in the Tattva Vivek. That's what it discusses. In other words, this is just saying what is the Vedic means, how they've overemphasized or only taken part of the Vedic facts and figures. Right, so they're out of balance, or there's only part of them taken. Something is there that it's not quite right. But now, these positions are there because of the modes of nature. So then that will explain that more, but generically, not specifically. In other words, those who, accept God's there, but, don't worry about it, or those who don't accept God's there, or who think the material energy. So here again, then the material energy is creating everything. Right? So in other words, as soon as you drop God out, material nature creates it.
Yeah. When is this Tattva Vivek?
After this one.
Okay.
Means right. not this page.
No.
Means this study. Okay. Right, so means in other words, the material energy is unintelligent, right? So there's no consciousness. So how would it take care of itself? And the Purushas that are here that could do something, there's innumerable ones of them, and they're not powerful enough. She's unlimited; they're limited, right? Mm-hmm. And there's so many of them that you're never going to come to a conclusion, right? It means you have a little family, and they can't conclude what's going to be for dinner, let alone the whole unlimited universe, like that. So therefore, it can't be them. There has to be an intelligence beyond, right? That would be the natural. But because they have limit the definition of God, they say, okay, if God's the one, that he has these qualities, so therefore, by definition of those qualities, he can't do that. So therefore, it's not. So that means conclusion is, since the living entities can't do it, and that's obvious, then by default, the material energy is doing it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that means it sounds strange, but that the point is, it is strange. But this is what they've come up with.
No, but according to the definition, it's completely.
All of them, like we see the Mayavadis, it means if they say that anything that is generated or perceived by the senses is illusion, that means their whole philosophy is illusion, right? Because you're hearing it through the senses, but they don't notice that part. In other words, you say the thing, but they only apply it where they want and not. So that's where you catch the illusion. Because you catch that, then you can catch them on the point. So you just, okay, there's the weakness. And so then you deal with that point. And they won't be able to answer it. So then they'll either change the conversation or, suddenly have an important appointment to go to, or they'll start yelling and screaming, or, something. You'll definitely get some response.
Rarely admitting.
Yeah, rarely admitting that, wow, okay, good point. But this is not possible, the proponents of non-theistic Shankya reply, because the act of controlling or guiding Prakriti means to do something, to be active. Because they're taking eternal and immutable. Immutable means not active, because if you act, there'll be change. But the can't point is, he can act and not change. That's God.
Yeah.
Right? So they're not taking that into consideration. So because they're looking at material nature, it acts, it changes. The jiva, he acts, it changes. So therefore, that means God, if he acts, he changes. He's immutable, so therefore he can't act.
They accept Gita?
Yeah, they quote Gita.
But it says God walks and he does not walk and all these things.
You don't worry about that one so much. There's other ones you worry about.
Yeah. You know, if it makes them happy.
Yeah. I mean, it's supposed to make them happy. They think it'll make them happy, but in addition, if God controls Prakriti, then what inspires God to make her create a world full of pain and misery? So what inspires him? So then they don't. So they, you know, even if he didn't do that, what would inspire him to do that? And the point is, it's not why would he make this world? Because then you're getting the question of living entities and their relationship with God, and they've acted outside of that. So they're giving here. But then they bring up the point is, you know, a place of misery and pain. You know, so if God is all perfect, why would he make such a place? Mm-hmm. Right. So in other words, they pick their points that they make, and that's it. So they don't deal beyond that. Mm-hmm. So they're not because, you know, we're dealing with this. So that's all. And then we just deal with this. Moreover, one cannot say that God has desires because desire implies imperfection. Right. Because here, if you have a desire, it means attachment. So it's imperfection. They don't understand pure desire, which is a quality God cannot have. Therefore, there's no such thing as God. Right? But the point is even by their philosophy, God could exist but have nothing to do with this world. Right? That wouldn't be against their philosophy. Right? There's a God, he's there and existing. And this material world, even if we say it's created by the material energy and all that, and we still follow the same process and get out of here. But it still doesn't mean God doesn't have to exist. Their philosophy doesn't. It doesn't depend on God not existing. And it's not that their philosophy proves that the God doesn't exist. Just, you know. You know what I'm saying? So it's unnecessary that they've taken the steps. Therefore, you know, the original authors brought out this point that the later Shankyites, you know, then they concluded that there is no God. But it's not that they just didn't deal with it. You know, just like in Patanjali, the second chapter, he deals with the Supreme Lord in that. But in the final chapter, he doesn't discuss him at all. You know, they're very minimal. You know, so it's just that whether he's there in the conclusion. So if he's not in the conclusion, if it's not required, because in their philosophy, he's not required. Right? So therefore, you know, like that. But the point is, since they're looking for that eternal situation of happiness, you're not going to get that because God did create it. Yeah. Right? And it functions under his law, so if you don't follow it, it's not going to work. Therefore, there's no Purusha is sufficient to inspire the unconscious Prakriti to manifest herself in the form of the universe. So therefore, you know, we're good enough. You know, we're the Purusha, so we can inspire. She's the one that's doing it. But we can inspire.
So we inspire unconscious matter.
Yes.
Just checking.
Who are we?
The Purusha means the Jivas.
All together, one by one?
Yeah, it means just we're individual Purushas. So he doesn't worry about that all these different Purushas are trying to do stuff, but on the social level that causes problems. But on the universal functioning of the laws, there's no contradiction. So they haven't addressed that. You know, how is it that the universal laws aren't being disturbed? You know, does that make sense? You know, so it's just that you don't follow them. You get reactions, and everybody else gets that. You know, so that's the. Yeah, so the point is it just comes back to if I myself analyze the material energy properly, I can free myself from it. So it all comes back again to myself, you know, which is the common point in all these. It means self-centered self-realization, right, as opposed to God-centered self-realization.
This is very true to the modern scientist.
Yes, because it's just him. If he sits there in his wheelchair and works it all out, then it's done. You know, you don't have to worry about it. You know, the problem is that little machine that gets the talking going. That's a little bit of a trip, you know. But you know, hey,
exotic.
Yeah. In debates with theistic opponents, they found it very difficult to explain the creation without including a supreme being in their system. One logical weakness of Nirishwara Shankya was that was attacked by theists. That was attacked by theists as the belief in many Purushas, but only one Prakriti. Was it one Purusha or all the Purushas together that inspired Prakriti to manifest? You know, did they all get together and have a meeting, and then she's a You know, so how does this work? If only one, then generation occurred against the will of the other Purushas. Hey, I didn't want this. You know, what are you doing there? You know, why? But notice is what's interesting is how the theistic that okay, you want to function on that level, let's do it. You know, and so they get down and then argue on that level rather than just know this. The Supreme Person know that there's this, and that the point of faith is that okay, you want to discuss these kind of mechanics. Hey, okay. So, in other words, they take their mechanics and apply it very well in some areas, but in other areas they don't apply it at all. So that's where you can, using their own system, right? What is it? You know, giving enough rope until someone hangs themselves. Yeah, so it's that's kind of the method.
It takes a bit of time.
Huh?
When you're discussing, when you're debating, it's like, it takes a bit of time.
Takes time. But I mean, people who do this have a lot of time, because for them, you're not. Why would you say it takes time? Because the businessman, is he worried that it takes time? Right. So that's the point: is the businessman will think this takes time because he could be making money, or the kids I could be playing, or you know something else. So, but for them, this is what's of interest. You know, it intellectually stimulating, and it's their process of liberation. Right? So for them, it's time well spent. You know, as long as you don't bump into a theistic shankyite, you know, then it's, you know, because then there's some problem, right?
But for a devotee to have like some of these discussions when we're preaching, it almost it's worthwhile if obviously you're representing Krishna.
Yes, it's only worthwhile if you're representing Krishna. But the point is the points on which are they're weak, they're not so difficult to discuss if you exactly get to them. You know, like that. Because once that's broken, then you can go, because they have nothing to say while they're thinking, then you introduce, you know, that therefore there must be a Supreme Person. Because otherwise, there's many, and how do they inspire the one, since they're all very small and she's unlimitedly big. So, and, you know, if you put them all together, it's still not as big as her. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's not really going to function like that. You know, or you could say, no, but it says in Shastra that as many atoms, that many living entities are there. That's there. But you have to remember that most of the atoms of the universe that, you know, is actually in an unconscious state. And so those jivas are also not in a conscious state. So there's actually very little is manifest in forms that therefore then there's a conscious. So it's the unconscious ones aren't involved in this, you know, was it one or was it all of them?
They're rarely inspiring.
Hmm?
They're rarely inspiring.
Rarely inspiring. You know?
Unconscious.
Yeah, no, they don't inspire too much. Yeah. Why did the desire of only one soul implicate all others in birth and death? And which was that one soul? You know, we should find that one soul, right? If all the Purushas together inspired Prakriti to create, then there must be some communication and agreement among the Purushas, right? But there's no record of a cosmic conference of all the Purushas to make such a decision. Cosmic Conference 2012, right? You know, okay. Therefore, there must be one Supreme Being who guides Prakriti independently. Right, so that's a nice then, because they've made this point, but then you know it comes back because it's very very weak. Because yes,
well, actually, it's interesting that actually Christianity says that there was only one Purusha who got everybody else.
Yeah, it's true, and then everybody else has to suffer for him, and then somehow they think that's fair. Right, you know, why should it be fair? And the thing is the ones who are saying it's fair are the ones that are making the others suffer, but not themselves. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not a...
Interesting.
Yeah, no, that's the whole point, is that by conditioning, you see certain things and certain things you don't. So where the ignorance is, you don't see and you make it backwards. But there's goodness, there's some clarity. You know, or passion, there's enough clarity to see what to do to get the result you want. But it's limited. Because of ignorance, that's why there's always going to be some ignorance somewhere. So somebody's going to not understand something. Okay, footnote one. This is the concept of material nature. That's just the heading for the regular. Okay, it's not for the footnote. Okay. Some say that the original Shankya was theistic. It appears that the Shankya from the Shashti Tantra referred to the Anir Budnya Samhita was of theistic character, resembling the doctrine of the Pancharatra Vaishnavas. Moreover, the Ahir Budnya Samhita says that Kapila's theory of Shankya was a Vaishnav one. Vijnana Bhikshi, the greatest expounder of Shankya, says in many places in his work, Vijnana Amrita Bhashya, that Shankya was originally theistic, and that the atheistic Shankya was only a Praudivada, an exaggerated attempt to show that no supposition of Ishwara is necessary to explain the world process. So here, that's, you know, by themselves. It's just to explain the process, but it just means you only take part of the process. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not taking, you know, what's behind that.
So again, detail becomes principle.
Yeah, the detail becomes, or, you know, the working of the detail is the principle. But the point is if it works there, it would also work on the bigger level, but they're not willing to apply it there. There's also one other thing comes out, is that, okay, if they inspired Prakriti to create, but if she's unconscious matter, how does conscious, you know, commune with unconscious? That becomes a difficulty. You know, and then there's also the point is, why would she want to? Okay, all the jivas together in the universe get together. They have their cosmic conference. They come up with, you know, agreed, you know, points, you know. But what would they come up with? Would they have come up with birth, death, old age, and disease? You know, it means they just thought it would be too, you know, okay, we, you know, we're sick of those kind of endings. You know, we got to have something more, you know, realistic and all that, you know. So therefore, you know, that was what was there. You know, that's it. You know, so therefore was the drama, you know, individuals, that they were the intellectuals, that they were the problem, you know, like that. And then was it the theater ones, or was it the movie ones? Who created the problem? You know, or the novels, or does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. If it doesn't make sense, that's also good. Okay, so, but then why would they come? What would they want? They would want the heavenly planets eternally, right? You don't have to work. You just have all the facilities. You enjoy anything you want happens, right? That would what they would have, you know, inspired material nature. So one is, one, why would she do that? Well, she's dead matter, so why would she respond in the first place? You know, hey, you know, I want lunch, and I want it good, you know? Don't skim. You know? Right?
I think we can sit here for a long time.
Yeah, it might be a while. So, you know, and then the second thing is that if she did, and she ended up like this, what was the reason she did it this way? But that doesn't seem to be a discussion.
Her response.
Yeah, that's her response. You know,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So you want to enjoy, do you? Okay. You know? So the whole it leaves a lot of holes here. Okay, but here the you know, he was the greatest proponent of Shankya. Then he's saying it was Vaishnava originally. An exaggerated attempt to show no supposition of Ishwar is necessary to explain the world process. Right? Because the point is if they're only interested in the world process, why worry that you don't have to have a god to explain it?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You know, it's just like the kids are having fun in their room and they're doing... Why do they have to have a discussion that there is no mom? Moms don't exist. You know, that's why we're having so much fun here. You know what I'm saying? You know, just have fun. You know, it's not you don't have to establish the point. So it's over exaggerated. If we believe that Shashti Tantra referred to an Ahir Budnya Samhita to be in all essential parts the same work, which is composed by Kapila and based faithfully on his teachings, then it has to be assumed that Kapila's Shankya was theistic. It seems probable that his disciple, Asuri, tried to popularize it, but it seems that a great change occurred when Panchashiksha, the disciple of Suri, came to deal with it. For we know that his doctrine differed from the traditional one in many important respects. It is said in Shankya Kartika that the literature was divided by him into many parts. This might mean that the original Shashti Tantra was rewritten by him in various treatises. It is a well-known fact that most of the schools of Vaishnavas accept a form of cosmology which is the same in most essential parts as Shankya cosmology. This justifies the assumption that Kapila's doctrine was probably theistic. The only supposition that may be ventured is that Panchashiksha probably modified Kapila's work in an atheistic way and passed it as Kapila's work. If this supposition is held reasonable, then we have three strata of Shankya. First, the theistic one, the details of which are lost, but which is kept in a modified form by the Patanjali school of Shankya. Second, an atheistic one as presented by Panchashiksha, and a third atheistic modification as the orthodox Shankya system. Dasgupta, History of Indian Philosophy. That's why I have all the maybes and possiblys, because this is an academic footnote. But the point is this is kind of understood that there must be that aspect. And as we can see is that the original thing is that in the Vaishnava text you always have the same thing. So Kapila Muni, that's Shankya. Because Shankya is just, that's the analyzation of how the material world functions, right? Explain the world process. But the point is why that process is there, you know, and how that's come into being and what that process is for, that they're not addressing. So that is God, the living entity, and his relationship with God.
So Maharaj, what we have here, it is a compilation of different ideas?
Meaning? No. Means you're going to have what is there, but the problem is what will come up is that you have the general Shankya system, but this was discussing whether it's theistic or not. Because once you get into the mechanics of it, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
Like that, because you're simply saying that this is there and then this is, you're just looking at the process. But the question is why that's there. So the weakness is in the non-theistic, then what really is the purpose? Why should there be such an elaborate system if, you know, there's no meaning to it? You know, other than it's a problem, so you get out of it. Because, you know, whoever, either the cosmic conference or the one individual who started it all, you know. But the problem is that one individual started it all. When he came here, there were already people here. Right, because he only had sons, but his sons got married, not to each other. I mean, yeah.
They're not human.
Oh, is that how it works? Very clever. But why would you marry a non-human?
Choice, probably.
No other choice. Yeah, it's just, you know, it was quite lonely, so I married my dog, you know.
Harsh times.
Yeah. Huh?
Human-like looking, barbarians. You can raise them to the standard.
Oh, so you're working on if? Okay, so then basically, if they don't have a particular situation, then they're not human anyway. So it's just a matter of okay, no, okay.
But then you consider to be human by the mother's side.
So then that becomes very difficult. Yeah, if you. And did they happen to be the ancestors of Darwin?
He's the ancestor of them.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Huh? And they liked apples. Okay. So does that mean they stay away from Kazakhs or something? Because that's where the Almaty means, Alma Mata means the mother of apples. That's what the name means. You know, in their consideration, apples came from there. All the apples of the world. like that. See, so you owe something to the Kazakhs.
Yeah.
Now that's one thing. It's now in the modern thing, you know, because they're going in, like you were talking about Monsanto and that, and now they can take all the apple trees that are there, that are indigenous, then take the thing and then claim that all anything else in the DNA in the world is that, and then everybody has to do it. The government can make a lot of money.
Huge.
Yeah. Like that. I mean, think what that's going to do to the American whole scene, you know, because it's mom and apple pie. So they're going to have to go to something else, mom and pumpkin pie, you know, something like that. But then the Indians could say, hey, pumpkins are from here. And then you're going to have to be, you know, mom and Coca-Cola, you know, like that. You're going to change the culture here. The Shankya system holds that the entire world, including the body, mind, and senses, is dependent upon, limited by, and produced by the combination of certain effects. Right, so now we've finished the theistic and atheistic.
Yeah, we finished also the God part.
Okay, so now we're just doing the how material nature. Okay, so that was God. But did we discuss jivas, or that's after? That'll be up. And whether there was a
cosmic
consciousness or just a singular endeavor.
Maybe they had a committee.
Yeah, maybe there's a committee. Yeah? Maybe she just liked that one, right? You know? Yeah. Okay. So the entire world, the body, the mind, the senses, everything is dependent upon, limited by, and produced by a combination of certain effects. Because that's what you're studying in Shankya, is what are the effects? You have the modes of nature, what are the effects of them? Or how what caused the modes of nature, or all the different things. Various other schools of philosophy, such as Charvak, Buddhism, Jainism, Nyaya, and Vaisheshika, maintain that atoms of earth, water, fire, and air are the material causes of the world. But according to the Shankya system, material atoms cannot produce subtler products of nature, such as mind, intelligence, and ego. Therefore, one has to seek elsewhere for that cause from which gross objects and their subtler aspects are derived. So here also we see a finer aspect of this philosophy that you don't get in the other, because that was the difficulty before. Much of you kept coming up with, how do you get mind out of earth? You know, like that. You know.
Yeah.
Stuff, right? Does that make sense? Because it doesn't make sense. You know, he had these, they were other atoms, okay, but they weren't exactly atoms. You know, that's the thing, is they were atoms but not atoms. You know, so, you know, it's not well explained, you know. Just like here, their lack of God is not well explained. Therefore, one has to seek elsewhere for that cause which gross objects and their subtler aspects are derived. If one examines nature, it becomes obvious that a cause is subtler than its associated effect, and that a cause pervades its effect. Right? For example, when a seed develops into a tree, whatever latent quality the seed contains will be found in the tree. Right? So in other words, there's the subtle, and then there's the gross. Right? So it's from the mind you get the gross. So anything subtle, you have an idea or a plan which is subtle, then you have the manifestation. So it's always that. Then what's behind that, what's behind that. So they only go back a certain amount. But the principle that the gross comes from the subtle, then that's a solid point. Okay. The ultimate cause of the world must be a latent principle of potential, and it must be uncaused, eternal, and all-pervading, right? Fits God, but somehow or another they aren't giving these qualities. It must be more subtle than the mind and intellect, right? Because if the gross is there, so then it has to be subtler than that. And at the same time, it must contain all the characteristics of the external objects, as well as the senses, mind, and intellect. In Shankya philosophy, this ultimate point is called prakriti. To prove its existence, Shankya offers the following five arguments. Right? So it's not going to be a problem that prakriti is the cause of these material elements. The problem is what's the cause of prakriti? Right? That's the actual. But otherwise, to establish, then, you know, they say, first, it accepted that all the objects of the world are limited and dependent upon something else. So there must be an unlimited and independent cause for the existence. That is prakriti. Right? But in the same logic, But Prakriti exists because it must be God. Mm-hmm. Right? And God, by definition, is that thing that doesn't have an origin. Prakriti isn't, by definition, doesn't have an origin. Second, all the objects of the world possess a common characteristic. They are capable of producing pleasure, pain, or indifference. But notice, when God creates it, it's only pain.
Yeah.
But when material nature produces them, there's pleasure, pain, and indifference. So you get three, right? You know. Therefore, something must exist as the cause of the universe that possesses the characteristics of pleasure, pain, and indifference. That is Prakriti. Third, all the objects... that's just the way they do it. You know, in other words, because they've already, means that's why they deal with God first. So if he's not there, then all that leaves is Prakriti. So it's just like, okay, you know, these three guys, you know, okay, one of you did that. One of you was talking in class. So was it you? No. Okay, was it you? No. So it's you.
Yeah. That's the logic.
Yeah. So all it is that, okay, if God's out of the picture and the jivas are out of the picture, so that leaves material energy, because all there is God, the jivas, and the material energy. So God's out of the picture, so it just leaves the material energy and the jivas. So jivas didn't do it, so material nature must do it. Because you know the element of the atoms and all this, so that, and there's the grosser and the subtler, so there must be behind that. So, but then that means is then, why would, if it's unconscious, why would it do that? But, I don't know. That
never clear for me.
Either. Never clear. It was never clear for them either.
Unconscious and mean.
And mean. Yeah. No, but here the pleasure is also there.
Price for that?
Huh?
With the price you have to pay?
Yeah, of course. You know, it's just like you go in, there's this little stone, it's about that big. And you have to put down a pile of cash about that big to get it. It's just the way it works. No?
Yeah, I found you.
It's just... Third, all the objects of the world have a potential to produce something else or to convert themselves into something else. Therefore, the cause must also have the same potential. Right, to cause and produce, convert and cause. So you also, I guess this is going back here, is that because it means they were working on the premise that gross comes from subtle and the qualities of the subtle are found in the gross.
It's called Satkaryavada.
Satkaryavada.
Okay. And the opposite is Asatkaryavada, Nyaya Visheshika. They subscribe to this, the Buddhists, the Jains.
Asatkaryavada.
The cause doesn't, the effect is not present in the cause.
The effect is not present in the cause.
Yeah. Hmm.
And they accept that actually it is present. All these Sankhya's, the Vaishnava source.
Okay.
And Shankara as well.
Shankara also.
Yeah. Although his way is, explaining is funny because the cause.
Well, he explains it funny so that they think they know what he's saying, but don't. Because if they actually know what he's saying be a devotee, but you don't. He doesn't want to make it too obvious, otherwise the Buddhists won't buy it.
Right? What did you call it?
Satkaryavada and Asatkaryavada. No.
It'll come up.
There is a footnote here, but in the material, in the file, not here. It's a new one.
Oh, okay. 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 Third, all the objects of the world have a potential to produce something else or to convert themselves into something else. Therefore, the cause must also have the same potential, which implicitly contains the entire universe. That is Prakriti. Fourth, in the process of evolution, an effect arises from its cause. And in disillusion, it is reabsorbed or dissolved into its origin. The particular objects of experience must therefore arise from a certain cause, which must in turn have arisen from a certain cause, and so on until one reaches the primal cause of the creative process itself. Similar process takes place in involution or annihilation. Here, physical elements are broken down into atoms. Atoms are dissolved into gross energies, and gross energies into finer ones, until all of these dissolve into the unmanifested one. That unmanifested one is Prakriti, the primordial nature. Right. So they take it up to a point and stop. Mm. That's all.
Yeah.
Fifth, if one attempts to go further and imagine the cause of this ultimate cause, he will land himself in the fallacy of infinite regression. Ultimately, one has to stop somewhere and identify a cause as the first cause of the universe. In Shankya philosophy, that supreme root cause of the world is called property. It means, since it's infinite regression, we'll stop before we get to God.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that. Okay, footnote 2. The idea that property is the ultimate cause of the world is refuted in the Srimad Bhagavatam. For example, in 2.10.45, it is stated, there is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of the material world. That is described in the Vedas about his direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. Right? In other words, he's not the one, he's not directly getting involved. She's getting involved. But otherwise, if you don't say that he's the controller, then you'll say material nature is the controller. So to counteract that, that point is made, because it's a subtle point. It's his energy. So therefore, in that way, he's doing it. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, the Vedic direction for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world is this. Yato va imani bhutani jayate yena jatani jivanti yat prayant yavisham vishanti iti. No, the next one, vishanti, okay. Everything is created by Brahman. That's Taittiriya Upanishad. After creation, everything is maintained by Brahman. And after annihilation, everything is conserved in Brahman. Gross materialists, without any knowledge of Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, conclude material nature to be the ultimate cause of the material manifestation. And the modern scientist also shares this view that the material nature is the ultimate cause of all the manifestations of the material world. This view is refuted by all Vedic literature. The Vedanta philosophy mentions that Brahman is the fountainhead of all creation, maintenance, and destruction. And Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentary of the Vedanta philosophy, says, Janmadyasya yaton vayat itiratas chartesva vigyasvarata, Srimad Bhagavatam 111, etc. Inert matter is undoubtedly energy with potential to interact, but it has no initiative of its own. Srimad Bhagavatam therefore comments on the aphorism Jadmanyasya by saying abhigya and swarat. The Supreme Brahman is not inert matter, but he is supreme consciousness and is independent. Therefore, inert matter cannot be the ultimate cause of the creation. Cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. Superficially, material nature appears to be the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction. But material nature is set into motion for creation by the Supreme Conscious Being, the Personality of Godhead. He is the background of all creation, maintenance, and destruction. And this is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9.10. Adyakshena, when the Lord throws his transcendental glance over the material nature, then only can the material nature act, as the father contacts the mother, who is then able to conceive a child. Although it appears to the layman that the mother gives birth to the child, the experienced man knows that the father gives birth to the child. The material nature therefore produces the moving and standing manifestations of the material world after being contacted by the Supreme Father, and not independently. Considering material nature to be the cause of creation, maintenance, etc., is called the logic of nipples on the neck of a goat. Because there's certain kinds of goats that have nipples in the front that look like on the milk bags, but you won't get any milk from them. Right? So it's not possible the energy itself would be able to function on its own. Right? It can transform and produce if something is added. Right? The field is there. It has all the potential, but until you put seeds there, it won't grow anything. Right? So that's the point, is material nature means what they're saying up to now, that is doing all these things, yes, but as the ultimate, it can't function that way. Yes?
You can say that grass also comes from the field without putting anything.
No, but it's the grass seed goes there, so we just don't see it happening. You know, because like in the summertime when you sneeze a lot or get hay fever, that's because there's a lot of grass seed flying around. And it's all those seeds, that's what's going around. They're very small, so they don't quite catch them.
So we can say the same thing, Maharaj.
Somebody
can say the same thing. We cannot see the system to change, so it's not so important.
Yes, but the point is that it's not so important, just like, let's say, a devotee doesn't know all the details of Shankya and how the universe is working, he can still chant and go back to Godhead, because he knows the principle behind it, that Krishna is the controller of the material energy. And so therefore he engages the material energy in the Lord's service. So then he can go back to Godhead. He doesn't know the detail, but he knows the principle. So here they know detail, but they don't know the principle. So it won't work for them. Okay, did that finish that? Yeah. Okay, gunas. Prakriti is not to be comprehended as merely the atomic substance of matter, nor can it be taken as a conscious principle behind the material substance. And it is not a hypothetical construction of the mind, a creation of philosophy and nothing more. Prakriti means literally exceptional ability. It is the wonderful nature out of which the vast material world and all its levels of intricate permutation take shape. Prakriti is characterized by the three gunas of sattva, rajas, and tamas. The word guna may be translated as a quality of, or attribute of prakriti. But it is important to note that the three gunas are not to be taken merely as surface aspects of material nature. They are rather the intrinsic nature of prakriti. The balanced combination of sattva, rajas, and tamas is prakriti, and thus they cannot be prakriti's external attributes or qualities. They are called gunas, that is, ropes, because they are intertwined like three strands of a rope that bind the soul to this world. Right? So that's why the word rope is always weird, because you have three strands, and they're put together, that makes the rope. See, so it's one thing, but it's made out of three. Right, so we're tied in this world by the modes of nature. You know, it's not one, it's the three of them together. Because that three creates the particular conditioning we have. Right? Now whether there's a so we say mode of goodness, we're talking about the predominance. The goodness wouldn't be there without passion or ignorance. Right? Passion can't be there without goodness or ignorance. Ignorance can't be there with goodness or passion. You know? So... Okay, footnote 3. In the Bhagavad Gita 14.5, it is stated, Sattvam rajas tama iti guna prakriti sambhava nibandhatni mahobaho deho dehinam avyayam. The material nature consists of three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. When the eternal living entity comes into contact with nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, he becomes conditioned by these modes. One could say that a rope is the same name for three intertwined strands. But one analyzes the strands separately, he does not see the rope. In a similar way, if he analyzes the gunas separately, one will not apprehend prakriti, since it is a balanced state of the three gunas. Right? That makes sense. If you analyze the tree, you don't see the forest. If you analyze the forest, you don't see the tree. You know, so that's the thing, is that we talk about with prakriti, we don't see the gunas. But we talk about the gunas, we don't see prakriti. So the point is gunas and prakriti are the same thing. Like, you know, maya therefore is called triguna mayi. Right? Because that's how it functions.
When said that a person can raise from mode of ignorance to passion to goodness, and they intertwine so closely.
Because by activities of the mode of goodness, can you actually get yourself out of the material nature? No. So that means the others are there. Yeah. Goodness means it's predominantly good. You know, like here, that's white. No? But that's also white. And that back there is also white. That's white. Okay? But the point is it just white? You understand? That has a little, that top one has a little red in it, the bottom one has a touch of yellow in it. You know, that has a little more yellow, the top one has more blue in it. That one's blue, that one has much more. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. They're always a mix, but it's predominant, so you call it white. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point, is that whatever's predominant is what you call it by. Does that make sense? Like here, sorry, you say, what color would you say that is? Blue, yeah, but there's a lot of other colors in it. But because it's predominantly blue, you call it blue. You know, the rug here will say it's black or gray, you know, but it's also got red in it. So that's the thing, is that's how the modes work. You say it's that because it's predominantly that.
So they're always present.
They're always present. That's why only when you add devotional service, then it becomes pure goodness. Because the point is it's goodness, but there's still the concept that I am this body, or I am the controller and enjoyer. You know? So therefore, there's ignorance there. And at the same time, if I'm controller and enjoyer, there's the element of passion. But the lifestyle, what they do, the activity may look exactly the same. It's in goodness. Right? But to be situated there and not be transcendental means that there must be these other elements. Because the smarta thinks, yeah, I'm born in the Brahmin family, so that means it's his body that makes him a Brahmin. Right? Otherwise, why would you think that? You know, it's who has the qualities, guna and karma, they're a Brahmin. But they'll go by, no, but socially you're born in that family, you're from that family. But that means then the body is the Brahmin. Right? Rather than the activities. Mm-hmm. So we get distracted by these elements, you know. So it's going to be, so the goodness, even in its best, still has a problem. You know, the demigods predominantly are in the mode of goodness, but still they do all kinds of insane stuff. You know, that comes from passion and ignorance. But it's predominantly goodness, because you see, once that moment is over, they go back to the normal sattvic lifestyle. Right? Does that make sense? Well, in others, they have a crazy lifestyle, and occasionally there's that moment where they do something nice. You know, so it's that's the...
And in the life of devotees, predominantly the mode of nature. Sometimes when you experience some devotional sentiments, that you're out of it.
Yeah, well, that's why there's a difference, because if you're in the kirtan, you're actually absorbed in the kirtan, you're not dealing with the modes of nature anymore. That's why it gives a different experience. That's why that has a nature, it lasts. The other fades, but that one doesn't. Does that make sense? Because it's different, you're dealing with transcendence. It may manifest through external energy, but that's the Lord's potency. But it's not under the control of the modes of nature. Yeah. Then you're dealing with the chit potency, so it's internal potency. This is something else. Okay. According to Shankya philosophy, sattva, rajas, and tamas are the underlying qualities from which the universe we perceive is derived. These gunas can be inferred from the fact that all features of the material world, external and internal, both the physical elements and the mind, are found to possess the capability of producing pleasure, pain, or indifference. The same object may be pleasing to one person, painful to another, and of no concern to a third. The same beautiful girl is pleasing to her boyfriend, painful to another girl is attracted to the same boy, and no concern to many people not involved. These qualities of the girl appearing in relation to other people around her arise from the gunas that underlie the manifested world. This example can help one see how the cause of all phenomena, prakriti, contains all the characteristics found in worldly objects. Right? So all the modes are there at once, but which is prominent, that's dependent upon what you perceive. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have one situation. Now, a businessman walks into that situation. What is it that he's, what's going to be standing out to him? Yeah, opportunity for making money. Let's say an interior decorator walks into the situation. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so depending on who it is, what modes of nature, they're going to find that there. That means Prakriti has all of them. It's just according to what you're controlled by, that's what you notice. So that just makes it even more complicated. Right? But there are situations that, let's say, the human being means by, what do you call it? Yeah, by determination or that, by choice, living in the forest, you know, for the purpose of, you know, higher realization. That's called mode of goodness. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is it's full of animals who are totally in the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? So all those modes are there. It means it has that effect for you, but for someone else it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole. Interesting. It's all there at once. You know? Because we're thinking, no, it's all according to how I see it. But it's actually, it's all there at once. And just we happen to see it and others happen to see it. That's why the importance of Shabda. Because Shabda then defines what actually is the way you should be seeing it. Because otherwise, you know, we, you know, everybody has their own idea how you should see it. So authority then says, this is how it's seen. Right? And so then the point is, why does authority say that? So then that brings it back to the personal. It means you can have the thing, yes, it makes everything run very nice, everyone has their duties, their obligations, you know, but why should it run nicely? Or why would you want it to run nicely? You know, I mean, say, so there's the point, there's the higher. Why would the Lord make it that way? You know, so then he as a person is the supreme authority. Otherwise, to manage the place, then it's Paramatma he does that. And, you know, the mechanics of it, it's all done by Brahman. So it's Shankin philosophy posits. Is that how you say it? Posits? Yeah? Shankin philosophy posits that the whole universe is evolved from the gunas. The state in which they are in their natural equilibrium is called prakriti. And when their balance is disturbed, they are said to be in vikriti, the heterogeneous state. The three gunas are said by the non-theistic Shankya philosophers to be the ultimate cause of all creation. Right? But then why would prakriti, if the gunas are the cause, but why would, but that, but in the balance is there, so why would, why would it go out of balance? Yeah. What would be the point? Do the gunas themselves want to go out of balance? Or just tired of being always so balanced? You know, if that balanced is boring, right? You know, so. Sattva is weightlessness and light, lagu. Rajas is motion or activity, chalam. And tamas is heaviness, darkness, inertia, or concealment, guru and avarana. The gunas are formless and omnipresent. When in a state of equilibrium, having completely given up their specific characteristics, then this, when thus submerged in each other. Okay. They're formless, omnipresent, when in a state of equilibrium, having given up their specific characteristics, when thus submerged in each other. Okay, so.
Could this be referring to the property that's unmanifest state?
Yes. Yeah, because you have prakriti unmanifest. But what the, but what they don't see is the glance of the Lord that separates it, and then the modes manifest. They're taken out of that balance, so-called balance. Because the point is it's still the material energy is always in balance. It means it's always, but the point is whether you're following according to the laws, nature. I mean, the natures of Krishna's laws. You follow that, then it works. You don't follow that, then there's always a problem. So it's just they're taking a specific aspect, so they don't focus so much on it. Does that make sense? like that. In a state of imbalance, however, Rajas is said to be the center of sattva and tamas, and this results in creation because manifestation in itself is an action. Action depends on motion, the force of activity that is the very nature of Rajas, and so sattva and tamas are dependent on Rajas to manifest themselves and thus produce pairs of opposites. Rajas is said to be the center of sattva and tamas. Okay, because action is there, but the point is this action is time. So when Krishna glanced, what went into the into Prakriti?
Time.
Right? But also when it is false ego, because unless there's ignorance, why would you be involved in the first place? Right? Because if Rajas is the center, then the point is that if you're in goodness, you're not doing anything for yourself because there's no ignorance. So then the whole thing would stop. Right? So there has to be, you know, that ignorance there that you don't actually know. Because then, as soon as then the fun part comes is that if you're God conscious, then it's not according to the modes of nature. So that's why then it's our karma. It's not karma. But at the same time, the material nature is still changing and giving results. Right? That still is going on. But at the same time, as you're not actually getting a material reaction. Mm-hmm. You're getting a spiritual reaction. Right? So that means the two can go on at once. Mm-hmm. So the form goes on and the spiritual. So that means there's not a problem in, what we're saying is then applying the philosophy into the elements of the world. Right? And so since one's doing that, then naturally, you know, we're discussing this morning, then you use the recommended forms to engage that philosophy through. So that's why authority is important, because that will establish what are the activities to do. Is that? Okay. Rajas also, because then sattva and tamas are your opposites. Rajas is what puts them together. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Because rajas means you have your duty, you know, but you think, you know, so that's the one thing. You have the goodness, what should, like that. Then you have the ignorance of what you think it could be or what you'd like to be and all this and that. Then the rajas is what brings that together. Right? But now if that's Krishna conscious, then that bringing together means then it's that the function is Krishna conscious. But in other words, because we'll get into this, why is that there? Because the masculine and feminine principles, right, is going to be there. So there's going to be something that brings them together, they interact. So this rajas, this three is going to be important, because then you're going to get into the masculine, the feminine, and the what combines it. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rajas also depends on sattva and tamas, however, because activity cannot be accomplished without the object or medium through which it is to be, it becomes activated. Right? So unless you have the form, the thing there, that object, how do you perform the action? But without the knowledge and the rules concerning it, how do you apply it? Mm-hmm. So you have to have the object, which is ignorance. You have to have the rules in that, which is goodness. But then there must be passion to actually affect it. Mm-hmm. Is that nice? In the state of manifestation, one guna dominates the other two, but they are never completely apart from each other or completely absent because they are continually reacting with one another. By the force of rajas, sattvic energy evolves with great speed, and its unitary energy becomes divided into numerous parts. At a certain stage, however, their velocity decreases, and they start to become closer and closer together, right, because the effect of ignorance. Mm-hmm. With this contraction in sattvic energy, tamas is naturally manifest. But at the same time, another push of the active force rajas occurs also on tamas. And within the contraction, a quick expansion occurs. Thus do the modes constantly change their predominance over one another. The predominance of sattva over tamas and of tamas over sattva is always simultaneously in process. The conversion of each of them into the other is taking place at every moment. Because ultimately it comes down to this, these two is going to be the, means an analyzation, it's going to be these two, because that's the masculine and feminine principle. Right? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And that would be, so tamas would be the masculine and feminine.
Feminine.
And the goodness would be the?
Masculine.
Masculine. Yeah. And why did you choose that order?
I don't know.
To put the masculine in a better situation.
Could be.
Okay, let's try this.
Okay.
The opposite.
Yes, yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, that's the actual.
Yeah. I thought so.
You understand? Energy understands energy.
The mind comes from goodness.
The mind comes from goodness, yeah. So that's the point, is that therefore that's the principle. But what you see, the situation, that's the... But at the same time as in the effort, there is, in the rajas, there's the effort itself and there's the experience gained from it. Mm. So the effort, that's the masculine. The experience, that's the feminine. Mm. So you have both of those. Mm. So Shankya is all about this. Right? Yes.
The authors put it in quite a scientific language. That's just a great point, just expansion and contraction and something like that.
No, because you have to use words that will always work. So the problem is when you're trying to define it so that it always applies, giving a general definition that always applies, then you have to use these kind of more neutral words. Because once you get into more specific, then the problem is then... the example that carries a particular thing and you use it in that way and see it in that way. Because you have particular interests in that particular object. Mm. So then you'll interpret it that way. I'm noticing, the positioning of things. Because for me, position's important. So when I point out the position, I will catch that. Because, I want to be on the top position, so I can see as okay. There's a hierarchy of positions, so I'll catch that quite easily, And so then, but in the application, I will be focusing on the position rather than just that's how they interact. You know what I'm saying? Is it like if we look, at, does that make sense? So if I apply, let's say we apply that, why that wouldn't work? Now if you apply, you have the position of the parents, okay, and the children. Right, and the house. Okay, so then we're going to, if we overly emphasize that, then what becomes prominent? Does the interaction between the parents and the children go well? Right, because it's all about me and my house and this and that. And you have to do what I say and all these. So where's the natural interaction? But when they're just pleasantly interacting. You don't look at position. You know what I'm saying? So what happens is that somebody sees this and then overemphasizes that. Because they overemphasize that, that's where it becomes a problem. Because that's what we said. It's an overemphasis of the mechanics of the material energy. So if you acknowledge God in it, it's not an overemphasis. It's just bringing out the detail. But if you leave God out of it, there's an overemphasis. And so then it becomes just like all the others, that they get too much into to logic or too much into the atomic theory or too much into the analyzation like that. So that's the difficulty. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
Or is this one has been a lot more hasty because of the connection with Krishna? And the other two are a bit like intellectual spaghetti kind of experience.
You don't like Italian.
Well, you know.
Oh, I see. Because there was no sauce. It was just
Cubby.
Also, is because we're dealing with this and trying to at every point bring in more of the Krishna conscious element. While before we were taking it kind of that you were automatically understanding that and just this is what Shankya, I mean what these other things are. And then it became obvious like halfway through Vaisheshika that that's not going to fly. So then we tried to put in a little bit more. But at the same time is because we're used to Kapila and that, and so this is very much how we'll use things. We don't generally emphasize so much the Nyaya or the atomic theory. You know, they're just side things. But Shankya, we can do a lot of work with that. So that's another thing, is this will become more appreciated. You know, we'll also find elements of yoga we'll appreciate. Then we get back into Karma Mimamsa, then you know, there'll be elements that we may not. I mean, the element of getting the results we'll like, but the element that you got to follow the Vedic rules, that we won't like so much. And then Vedanta again will look familiar. So. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samavita Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gauri. Okay, because why spaghetti? Why not the, you know, you take, you know, like say, you took potatoes and grate them and that also is a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
Intellectual grated potatoes.
Yeah.
You know, we generally wouldn't use that. We would use some other, how you say, you know, ethnic cuisine or something.
Yeah. Could be crackers.
Could be crackers.
Intellectual crackers.